Hello and welcome in today's episode of the Data Role podcast. Today, we'll be discussing the ins and outs of data and analytics with a real data expert who's been getting his hands dirty with data over his whole career. So today with me, we've got Radek Łukaszewski. Hi, Radek.
Hi, Stan. Nice to meet you. Hello. Thanks for having me on your podcast and congrats for this great initiative. Really like it. A great idea.
Thanks a lot for joining me today. And I would like that we discuss the data now from a really technological, technical, and also adoption and governance perspective. Also, when it comes to the context of the both medium and bigger companies that you've been working at. But how about we start from a short introduction? If you could tell our audience what's your background and more about yourself. Over to you.
Thank you. As said, I'm Radek. And so my interest and fascination with computers, computer science, data have been evolving since like practically since I got my first computer when I was little. I think it was like in some early 90s when my parents got me Commodore 64. And, and then I realized how powerful this thing was, even though this was not an extremely powerful machine compared to like what we have in our smartphone. Then, I think this fascination made me actually attend the high school where I chose class that was called so-called an experimental class that had a computer science profile. And that actually it was where I continued and like deepened my knowledge of like computer science. And we started programming back then in Pascal mainly. So it was like, I would say like a very good choice. As then afterwards, I again decided to further develop that interest and that knowledge. And I decided to study computer science and econometrics at the University of Gdańsk. We had our department in Sopot, a very beautiful city by the sea, very close to the beautiful pier, where we used to have like lots of, nice walks. And we enjoyed our time there, of course. But actually, I think that, all those years, like from early childhood to like throughout high school and then until time when I became like a student, I think all those years shaped me as a person, but also shaped my interest a lot. And then, after university, I briefly worked in Poland and I worked for General Electric Moneybuy, and I was part of the data team. And it was like the first time where actually I kind of like, had a pleasure to interact with like state-of-the-art business analytics tools. So this was when I first experienced like using MicroStrategy platform, and we also used SAS for statistical analysis. And it was like really, great experience. We had large volumes of data, and the team was like basically, very talented, and I learned from all of them. Because they were like, junior people, senior people, and then we had like nice environment to experiment and to share the knowledge. However, since I would say like early years, I quite knew that I want to experience like something more than just like living in one country. So in 2005, I decided to move to UK, and I moved to London, had some friends there already living there and working there. And then actually, it was actually in London where I had my first contact with like the online gambling industry. And basically in London, I was approached by one of the recruiters, and he asked me if I was interested in working in iGaming. But back then, of course, my understanding of gaming and like even existence of iGaming business was, I would say, was quite limited. Yes, of course, I heard about online casinos, but since I was not really a gambler, and I'm still like not really a gambler apart from like occasional gambling for fun, I did not really know like what this whole thing was about. So I was curious, and I said like, yes, why not? Let's meet, let's chat. So I met him, and then I had my with the company who back then was operating the first online casino brand. As you may know, it was Inter Casino, and that company was launched in 1996. So it was the first online casino, basically. So when I got to know about that, I thought like, wow, it's like hitting a jackpot, like working for a company that set up the first online
innovation.
Brand. Innovation, exactly. I was really like happy that I called it. Opportunity actually came across me, because actually they found me. So then, of course, like an interview, I met them, and then like where I was off the job. So I joined the company in 2005, and like from day one, I was really happy like to be there. And funny enough, like they also used MicroStrategy as a platform. So I had like already my experience from working at the bank in Poland, and it actually like made me feel quite comfortable, because like I did not like to spend like a lot of time to kind of like understand like their analytics, like data and analytics landscape. So there we were a team of two people, like quite a small team. It was, you know, like a startup. And basically we used to provide like analytics to the entire business, all the stakeholders. And back then we also had, you know, majority of our market or actually our customers were based in the States. Because back then, like, there was no like any restrictions in terms of like, you know, if the company can operate in US or not. So the whole market was basically like open to everyone, no regulation, no licensing. And I remember like it was really crazy, you know, like to see like the amount of money that people were betting and like the company was making. At the same time, you know, we had like lots of affiliates who were making like really like very, very like decent money every month from their commissions and from other deals. So of course, like this was like an eye opener, yes, because, you know, before I joined that business, I did not realize that it's so huge. But, you know, like the more you are part of it, the more you learn and kind of like you realize that, you know, it's like, it's almost like, I don't know, like you can compare it to banking, since, you know, players have their accounts and they deposit money, they withdraw money, they have their statements. I would say like the only difference is like the product they purchase with the money. So after Intercasino, I basically decided to move to Malta because, you know, the English weather had it all on me. So I started looking for opportunities elsewhere, and then I decided to move to Malta. I found a nice opportunity with a company called Betway, and they still exist, and I know that they're still doing very well because their office is like just around the corner from my current office. And basically, that role was like, of course, a BI role as well. And one of the recruiters basically called me and he said, like, listen, like, we have this role. Would you like to discuss it? And then within like 2 months, I relocated to Malta and started my kind of new chapter there. And back then, like, again, I knew about Malta and I knew about online gambling in Malta. I knew that Malta was the first country that introduced a regulatory framework for online gambling. So this was something that I saw as a, you know, like a good opportunity. I would say this was like very early days of like, you know, like online gaming in Malta. And back then, like the business or like the industry was not as, you know, as mature as it is now. Hardly anyone spoke about, you know, regulation. There was MGA, of course, but MGA, they would, you know, they would regulate pretty much every other market. So it wasn't like, you know, like it's these days when we have like, you know, all those different gaming commissions like UKGC or SGA in Sweden that like, you know, regulate like their local markets. And at Betway, I was the first guy actually called like, you know, like, there's this numbers guy or the BI guy. So basically my tasks were like literally spanning like, you know, a number of like, you know, like different stakeholders. And I had to do like different things like, across, you know, different departments, interact with different people who needed some numbers. And basically the company was quite small. We were in total about 50 people. And basically I was just at the beginning, like for a first year, I was the only person actually covering like, you know, like supporting like the business from the BI front. Of course, I would work with, you know, like other people from like, you know, IT or like with the DBAs as well. But there wasn't like, you know, a BI team as we kind of like understand it, like that specializing in like, you know, developing a data warehouse or building analytics. I had some like great, excellent like DBA guys who would basically supply me in creating some, you know, different like data marts that then I used like to basically extract insights from. So it was like a great experience. And then after that year, we had so much actually demand for analytics that we decided to hire another person to join the team. And then actually we were like working together and basically the role expanded onto like even the business that was like acquiring us back then actually, which was Spin Palace Casino that acquired Betway brand. And then we ended up working with actually a number of people in the London office who then like formed, I would say, like the larger, like, you know, like data team. After 3 years there, I decided to try out like, you know, new opportunities. And back then, everyone was talking about the company called Betsson. And Betsson was like, you know, like everyone wanted to be there, to work there. And I basically applied there and I joined the company as VI developer. And there I was focusing less on analytics, but more on like development of the data platform at Betsson. And I thought like, you know, this is something that would kind of expose me to slightly, you know, different kind of experiences and, you know, different things that I had to like do every day. Because it was less about, you know, crunching numbers and providing insight. It was more about like, you know, like the practices when it comes to like, you know, like creating a data warehouse, using like, you know, a data integration software. So when I joined, we were a small team of just 4 guys and it really felt like a startup environment. And then when I was leaving the company in 2013 and I was then going to join Amaya Gaming, our team at Batson was just about, I think, 30 people. So over just 3 years, we've grown like 7 times, basically, like in terms of headcount. And all this was, of course, due to the huge demand for data like within the business. But I have to say, like from like my experience and knowing myself more and learning about myself over the years, I would say like I can work in an environment, but I would say that I still prefer, I think, smaller companies where you have this opportunity to interact with people closer way. So you kind of you are given maybe more time to basically discuss different matters with the people if you are a smaller company, and things happen much faster as well. So decisions in online gaming companies, like those companies like to experiment, they like to try out new things. But again, working for a small iGaming company, I would say that it is quite different than working for a corporation where you have number of established processes that you need to follow. There's not much room for deviation. You always need to be following the line that someone has established for you. Yeah, so like I said, I joined iGaming later on, and this is the company, by the way, that was acquired by Flutter in 2020. And Amaya, back in those days when I was there, they acquired PokerStars. And then at that time, they also had Casino brand, which was Inter Casino. So this was the same Inter Casino brand that I worked for when I used to live in London, because Amaya Gaming bought it from the previous owners. So basically, they decided to sell Inter Casino brand to the other company, which back then, I was part of. And with that transition, I was a member of Intertain. Intertain acquired the Market Gaming, who is owner of Varajon brand, which, as you know, is currently also owned by current company, Bally's. And Varajon brand basically used to be back then extremely famous in Sweden. And it is a brand that is very popular in Asia and in Japan as well. So yes, this is where I am.
Perfect. So given that you have a good coverage and super broad knowledge of different companies and actors on the market, I'm happy to discuss, starting by the tools. So you have seen various different tools in your career, MicroStrategy that you have mentioned, but I'm pretty sure also that you've worked with Power BI or Tableau, and these are the go-to tools, the two most popular technologies worldwide for data visualization and modeling, and when it comes to fueling the business teams like marketing and responsible gambling. So how do you see the role of these tools when supporting the business with those data and insights?
I feel that, any tool that the company may be using, yes, if you are using the tool, if you have some data roadmap, if you have some data platform, and you are using some, BI tools, it's already a great I would say foundation. And of course, those tools, they play a very critical role in enabling the business to achieve their goals. And I think that, especially important in areas like marketing and also responsible gambling, because, those are those areas where you need in making those data-driven decisions. And in terms of how actually those tools can contribute to, as you said, to fueling insights, I would say there are multiple examples, but I would say I would mention maybe just a few of them. So one of the examples for sure is real-time decision-making. So both, for example, Power BI and Tableau, they can provide real-time dashboards that, can visualize important KPIs. So those KPIs would be focused at customer acquisition, customer retention, you could visualize churn rate, you can visualize betting behaviors as well. And marketing teams, for example, they can instantly adjust their campaign based on all those insights, all those performance metrics. And most importantly, they can optimize their spend on acquisition, so on paid advertising, for example. And this also lets them tailor promotions for specific audiences, for specific segments of their customers. And as a result, they can improve their ROI. And then on the other end, where real-time decision-making plays a key factor, like I said, it's responsible gambling. So actually, I would say, in the world of regulated gambling, so if you look at UK, yes, I mean, there's strict regulations, which is still evolving. And I think real-time analytics in this kind of environment lets you, monitor customer activity. You can look for signs of problem gambling. And this actually allows to trigger different interventions or alerts as soon as customers start to show some, you know, like a risky behavior. Another actually way where such tools contribute to, you know, like providing some insights about the business is actually the area of segmentation and personalization. So of course, like those are, I would say, kind of like the, you know, like almost everyone is using segmentation, personalization in making in like marketing offers, like, you know, like tailored, specific, not even like a group of customers. Like these days, like everything like should be kind of tailored at that specific customer. So basically both, you know, like Tableau Power BI, they allow to kind of like visualize like segments of your customers. They have like some embedded capabilities as well when it comes to like, you know, classification. And they have some, you know, machine learning models embedded as well. And you can build some, you know, like POCs, you can build some MVPs, some profiles for customers based on historical behaviors or betting patterns or customer preferences. And again, thanks to this, those marketing teams can actually come up with some more personalized offers. I would not say that Power BI or Tableau are the tools that you should like use specifically to kind of like, you know, like to use them as like, you know, I'd say like day-to-day tools to kind of like segment your customers. Yes, I would say those tools are not good for that. For that, you basically build your machine learning models that you train, that you retrain, that you test, and outputs of those models should kind of like be feeding your marketing automation tools. But nonetheless, I would say like both Power BI and Tableau can actually give you some good insight, you know, like, and I would say like, you know, in this space before you build the actual model, you know, like having some analysis done in one of the tools gives you like already like a lot of information at the very beginning. And then another example could be compliance and reporting for responsible gambling. So again, in the modern online gambling world, as we said, there is a lot of regulation and, you know, it's more and more. Every country, like, you know, they know that they can get some extra money from taxes of the companies who operate in the markets. So I think that's why it is so important that basically the specific stakeholders, like compliance team or RG teams, that they actually have the tools that can be utilized by them to, you know, to monitor things like, you know, player deposits or player withdrawals or player session times to make sure that customers are not gambling excessively. Or on the other hand, you know, like they can use those tools to provide regulatory reporting to gaming commissions. Yes. I mean, if you look at the US, for example, in the US, like every state has its own regulation. Every gaming commission has their own set of reports, which the operator has to supply them with. So I would say, you know, like having all this like automated in any of those tools is already like a massive kind of like, I would say, improvement as then you remove a lot of manual work. And also you remove a lot of like, you know, like a propensity for any like, you know, mistakes which like human, like a person could make when building something. And the last one, the last example, I think that is a nice example actually where such tools contribute like getting insight is actually enhanced collaboration across teams within the company. Because very often the way, you know, like people look at like those BI tools is that, oh, I work in like, you know, like this and this team. And I'm not BI, so I don't touch this. You know, it's for BI teams. So like I let them do this, you know, like maybe they send me some email with some findings and it's when I'm going to interact with this. But these days, of course, you know, like it's not how you work. These days, like, you know, everyone should be at least like, you know, like to some degree, like, you know, literate about data. And these days, those tools, they have capabilities which let all the users like interact with the data. You can, you know, you can share data. Like in Tableau, for example, you can write comments and you can like comment like on different like views, different dashboards. And actually, I think this is like very important that those tools, in a way, like they kind of like improve collaboration like across different departments. And of course, like, you know, like with the collective effort, you can achieve way more.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing is that you can have great tools, but another is if your teams use them. And as you said, that there's, that's not for me. I'm not the BI person, etc. And actually, in order to what you mentioned, the data literacy is a term that is pretty much recurring when it comes to analytics adoption. How, from your experience, did you address topics that are related to data literacy and making sure that when people lack the proper training, how to use those modern analytical tools, how to actually make them empowered to do so?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. So there is definitely a gap, you know, some companies may have a smaller gap, some companies may have a bigger gap, but there's definitely this gap like between, you know, like the availability of those tools an actual adoption by different teams. And I think like to address this gap, you need like a multi-level approach, and you need to focus on definitely like on training, on culture. So the culture with the company needs to be like focused on data and like numbers, and people need to understand that, you know, like that they need to make decisions based on like some kind of insight that they receive. And also I think a widespread process integration is, I mean, this basically cannot be something that is happening, you know, like in one area of the business. This has to be like a, I would say like a holistic approach that is adopted in across the board within the business. And now like to kind of like to further expand on this. So when it comes to education, yes, or like training, so many users in the company, like they never like use any BI tools, maybe apart from like, you know, like using Excel, I don't know, like other things we can call it Excel BI tool maybe as well. But I would say the tools as we kind of like, you know, like understand them while having this discussion. So I met people that never used Tableau, and they were telling us, hey, like, you know, can you arrange some training? Can you arrange some session? And, you know, you can send them to like some learning platforms, and you know, they can go to LinkedIn Learning, they can go to Coursera, and they can take some training. But again, from my experience, like working with the people actually at, you know, like previous companies that I had worked for, I think people value this kind of like, you know, like face-to-face training. And back then we were organizing sessions for, you know, whoever was actually willing to participate. And I can tell you like our kind of classroom, like the boardroom was always like full. And we would do like a Tableau, you know, foundation training. And then like whoever was interested, we would do some more advanced training. So this proved like very successful. And definitely actually by doing this, we created a number of, you know, like Tableau Power users who would then actually be, I would say, quite, you know, like data savvy, you know, like independent when it comes to like performing some analysis that related to their area. Then, for example, you know, like as I said as well, another integration of those tools in the workflows. Yes, I mean, you can have BI tools and you can build like, you know, the most dashboard. But you know, as long as it's not kind of like, you know, like embedded in any of those like decision making processes, it's just a dashboard, useless. Okay, so as I said, you know, by providing like a in-house dedicated training, we created quite a few power users who became our ambassadors with the company, and they were like very like independent when it comes to like creating their daily reporting, and they would support other users who are less experienced as well. So definitely training is extremely important in, you know, bridging this gap between actually the tools and actually the users making like use of those tools.
Another topic after data literacy is data democratization. So on one hand, the BI team prepares reports for the business teams, while on the other hand, you got reports and users that create their own reports but without getting in touch with the BI team. And that's what we call the ideal scenario when the data has been democratized. And if you were to call out what you consider the best practices when it comes to democratizing the data, what would that be?
I think like you're touching here like a very important, however, I would say like quite a challenging topic, because, you know, everyone speaks about data democratization. But I would say data democratization has its like huge benefits, but also like carries a lot of challenges. And it depends like really like also like on the type of company that you're trying to do it at. Yes, I mean, I remember like, you know, working for a smaller company operating in non-regulated markets. We had like, you know, many users having access to everything, and like everyone was like, you know, like literate about data, and people like could do their own analysis, and everyone was happy. But, you know, like working in a company where, you know, multiple markets, multi-regulatory frameworks, I would say that it is very challenging, yes. So I would say that democratization in general, if you want to do it, you have to do it. And I would say like you have to do it, of course. But it has to be done in a structured way so that you always ensure your data quality, security, and consistency. So I would say like you need for this to work, or like for this to be a success, you need to establish a clear data governance framework. So you need to make sure that, you know, like as a minimum, you need to have defined roles and ownership. So you, like people need to know like who owns the data and who is responsible for maintaining like even data and who can access certain data. You should have some data access policies. So you know, you need to implement role-based access controls. You cannot really give access like to everyone so that they can access all data. I mean, these days it would be like a very risky, and the company could potentially risk some fines from regulators. Data quality, definitely, like, you know, like it's, I would say, most likely as important as like the previous two that I mentioned. So you need to ensure that you have clean data, since you like, you know, like democratizing it. You don't want to offer people access to like bad data or inaccurate data. And this should be like, you know, consistent across the organization. Users who use, or users who would be using this data, your consumers, they need to be like reassured that the data they have been given access to can be trusted. Yes. I think like the moment, you know, people start noticing issues about your data that they're using is the moment when you're like losing trust, and people turn to, you know, some like other, I would say other, you know, like data sources, or they stop trusting you. They try to like make their own assumptions, or they turn to maybe like, you know, other like tools, which you may not even know about. Yes. I mean, like they may be like installing some like tools on the site, and they may start doing their own analysis. And then actually I would say where the problem starts, and people start like building like their own basically BI data team within another team. So I would say that's quite a risky situation. And also like compliance and security. Yes. I would say this is very important in the context of data democratization. There is, you know, these days, like companies like, you know, Bally's, or practically like any other gaming company that is successful, as they operate in the environment where there is like, you know, like millions of like transactions processed every day. And basically, at the same time, there is like sensitive data of our customers, PI data. And of course, this is like basically the biggest asset these days. Yes. I mean, it's not like, you know, like you can steal something physically from like a company operating in the field of e-commerce. The biggest asset of any such company is their data. So that's why it is so important that companies, they protect and they manage such sensitive data in a proper way, and their respective frameworks in place.
Modern gaming companies operate across diverse markets and a whole portfolio of brands. What are the biggest challenges when it comes to the data integration and the data management in such scenarios?
I think that like these days, when, you know, when the market itself within like online gambling is so dynamic, where different companies they acquire other companies, companies merge and you know, grow for acquisitions, all this presents us with many challenges, and actually, like, you know, operating like across multiple markets makes data integration and data management quite complex. So basically, the challenges could be, you know, operating like disparate gaming platforms or disparate data platforms, or, you know, companies having like different technology stacks, different data governance process as well. So I would say those are like the key challenges. For example, when it comes to, you know, like those, like, you know, disparate data sources, and here what I have in mind are those gaming platforms and data platforms. We can say that, for example, like different companies, they use like different technologies, such as like some may be using, let's say, you know, like some something like IBM DB2 or MySQL or Amazon Redshift, for example. Some others may be using Azure, and basically integrating all this data in a unified platform that, let's say, you're trying to build as a foundation, I would say it becomes a technical as well as the operational challenge. Yes, since like if you don't do it, yes, I mean, you end up operating in this, like, you know, fragmented data silos, and it becomes quite difficult to have a holistic view of the entire business. And then I think your data accuracy and data consistency are at risk once you don't have a single source of truth. Yes. I mean, this is a quite a common topic, like, or quite a common kind of phrase. Yes. Single source of truth. But I would say, you know, it is a challenge to kind of achieve that in the environment where the company, you know, like operates across like multiple markets, multiple like jurisdictions, where different jurisdictions have different regulatory frameworks. So it's definitely a big challenge. And that's why, you know, like implementation of an enterprise data integration platform, which can handle things like, you know, real-time data ingestion from different sources, and where you can integrate with a centralized data warehouse and have a common data model to standardize data representation across different platforms, helps reduce inconsistencies in your data. So that's definitely like a big challenge.
Thank you, Radek. Now, my next question will revolve around the ETL. So as we all know, the raw exports of the data that we have extracted from the systems, it has no meaning to a human being. It cannot be simply interpreted by person. And what are the different methods and analytical tools that you would use to turn raw data into useful information. Also, when I'm thinking to it, we often discuss the ideal scenario when the company has a common data foundation that is later reused across different business teams, for example, in Synapse or Databricks. How did you approach this topic?
So, of course, like working with those, like these days, I would say like potentially billions of millions of transactions, you cannot simply put this in Excel to get some findings. I mean, maybe like for like a specific market, once you have some aggregated data, yes, you could do it. But to turn your data into actionable insights, it involves a combination of data processing methods. And of course, for that, you need some analytical tools and also visualization techniques. So first one that comes to mind is, and I would say it's like kind of fundamental, is data cleaning and integration. Yes. So of course, raw data from, you know, different diverse sources. So you could have like, you know, game metadata, you have transactions, have some like marketing data or compliance data. You need to basically, first of all, like make sure that it's all clean and standardized, and you need to integrate it into your central data warehouse or like a data lakehouse. And thanks to this, you ensure that your data is consistent and basically like you prepare it for the next step for data analysis. And then going to data analysis, again, you know, you have a selection of different tools. So, you know, you could use tools such as Power BI and Tableau. But then you can use like more advanced tools or like programming languages. You can use Python, you can use R to actually get more insights through like descriptive and predictive analytics. And you can build machine learning models as well. And I would say this is like where many companies like have been, you know, like putting the efforts to kind of like, you know, like build those models, especially like these days when there is like, you know, like so much talk about AI. And with the appearance of ChatGPT, this has become even like more popular actually to have like data teams actually, or machine learning teams, like building those models. So you could build like a fraud detection or trend prediction or customer lifetime value model to actually prove or forecast the value of your customers. And then there is data visualization and real-time reporting. So again, you know, tools like Tableau and Power BI convert complex data into visual dashboards. And thanks to those dashboards, stakeholders can track their KPIs, they can monitor customers' behavior, they can ensure that regulatory compliance in real time as well. I mean, one of the companies that I had worked for before had literally like a massive screens all over the office where they would see like, you know, each and individual bet of every customer. And on the other screen, they would see like each and every, you know, payment of the customer. And they had a team, they had like a fleet of people actually that would, you know, be ready to either like start an interaction with the customer, like, you know, through the chat or through the phone, whenever they saw some kind of anomaly. So of course, like, you know, like they would be looking at some like big depositing customers or customers who would like, let's say, who had a big winning, let's say they won a jackpot. And of course, every gaming company, you know, like, you know, they're happy when the customer wins, but at the same time, I mean, like it's a business, yes? So they want that jackpot winner to keep on playing like on their side. Yes, they don't want them to take the money and go to the competition. So interaction, I would say, at this like very like first moment is very important. Yes, so I think like real-time reporting is definitely, you know, like an important factor here.
Okay, time for the next question. Let's speak about the trends. So what are the trends in data and analytics that you can see appearing on the horizon that would apply to the online gambling industry?
Definitely, the AI is something that every company wants to implement some AI solutions. So this is something that I think like has a lot of potential. However, I think like, you know, very often you hear about AI and about ML and their need, but I think that, you know, like companies, they still like learning or experiment a lot when it comes to AI. Still quite, well, AI itself, it is not maybe like these days a very popular kind of slogan that people use. But to build like, you know, like solutions such as ChatGPT, for example, is, I mean, like, I would say that some that companies still need to like maybe find the right use case for this. I went to Gartner conference last year and I saw some BI tools like Tableau. They basically, you know, like Power BI, I believe as well, they embed, you know, some ChatGPT features in the user interface. They offer users to like ask questions and they throw out some numbers. And, you know, it's a nice thing, but I would say like, you know, it's kind of like quite a basic thing, yes. And I would say that requires like a shift in terms of like, you know, people's mindsets and people's approaches to kind of like start like working in this way where you actually stop looking at the dashboard, but you actually start asking questions through the prompt. Yes. So I would say like AI for sure, but I think companies need to understand and need to kind of like come up with some good use cases where this can be adjusted, this can be implemented. Another one I think is around data privacy and data security. So for example, the AI that we mentioned before, of course, it carries its challenges. Yes. So first of all, you know, like companies like which are using such techniques need to be aware of like, you know, like any possible data privacy issues and need to make sure that they are processing this data like within the set regulatory framework. On the other hand, through doing like this that way, you basically build trust with players that, and you kind of assure them that you're safeguarding their personal data as well as their financial data as well, you know, like, and that you basically follow some regulatory requirements which are constantly evolving. Yes, because you know every day, like if you read the gambling news, there's almost like every day some changes in the regulations everywhere. Another one that I think will be kind of like something that will be growing is the real-time analytics. So, you know, the earlier you can react or even like, you know, like you can actually be proactive, the more successful you will be. So I think that, you know, drawing emphasis on real-time data processing so that teams have immediate insights and can respond quickly is very crucial. And definitely thanks to this, you know, like by interacting with customers in this way, you improve player engagement. So that's very important.
Finally, as we are approaching slowly to the end of this episode, let's speak about your personal recommendations. So the three key lessons, if you were to name three items, what would you like to convey to the audience about data and analytics in iGaming? Name three key lessons.
Okay, so that's a tough question because again, like there's more than three that come to mind. I think the first one comes to mind is to establish a good foundation for your data. And I would say like learn to crawl before you start walking or flying and prioritize data quality and data integration. I think that, you know, many companies or like many like data leaders, not only gaming companies, but companies in the field of e-commerce in general, sometimes I see like they kind of like follow that kind of hype about particular technology or a particular vendor, and they want to like quickly like basically like change the entire landscape and reshape it, and like, you know, like not even having sometimes, you know, like a good foundation, like a good, I would say like data warehouse, lake. They try to basically like start from flying before they can walk. So I would say like definitely this foundation is important, and definitely like, you know, like foundation sets you like for success in the future. So having like consistent data, well integrated data that will let you like perform effective analytics, data that is accurate and you know comprehensive from all the sources that you need it to be from. Otherwise, you know, poor data, bad decisions, misguided decisions. So definitely like foundation, I would say, is a key. Number two, I would say technology, but technology in a way in that context which I mentioned before. Yes, so do not get hyped by like the latest technology, or you know, don't stick to a specific vendor unless you really have to. Because I believe sometimes there may be cases when you need to stick to some specific vendor because it nicely integrates with your existing technology stack. I would say like research, experiment, learn, explore, you know, like execute some POCs, but always stick to your established data roadmap and adjust daily. Don't change direction like completely or too frequently, as otherwise, I think, you know, you would start going sideways and I think you lose focus. Yes. So I would say like set some road and like stick to it and adjust as needed. And the third one that perhaps is, I would say, the most important lesson and I think quite an obvious lesson, yeah, is like understand that people are important, or people are the most important, yes, in this whole thing, because people are the ones who make those companies, like who set up those companies and run those companies. And people are our customers and our employees as well. So I think that there is nothing more valuable than having a motivated and talented team that is working towards achieving like new, like the established goals. And I think that this applies to all levels, you know, like at every organization, or it should apply to all levels of every organization. And, you know, myself, I had great mentors from my gaming. I had an opportunity to work with founders of different companies, and those founders like were very successful. They sold their companies like for multi-million dollar figures. And those were the guys that would, like, you know, literally they would come to your desk and they would, like, you know, sit next to you, chat to you about, like, you know, like projects that you're working on, and you know, ask you questions about, like, what you're doing and, like, what you would improve. So, like, you know, very open-minded people. And I would say, like, all this was extremely valuable and inspirational to me. And definitely, like, those moments are the moments that you remember.
Thank you, Radek. This was my last question for today. Once again, thanks a lot, Radek, for your ample answers and for your participation in today's episode.
Thanks so much, Stan. Thank you. I appreciate it. And keep up the great work you're doing.
Thank you, Radek. So guys, that's going to be it for today. This was Stan signing off for the moment. And remember, keep rolling with the data.